From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, funding the fight against wildfires. Did the Texas Forest Service get whacked too hard by the budget acts? And should we blame the EPA for the layoffs at Luminant Energy?
Yeah, the headline should not be EPA rules kill Luminant jobs. The truthful headline is Luminant has killed the jobs at its own plant.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. Governor Rick Perry remains the front runner in the GOP contest to be the presidential nominee. But the same swagger and boldness that made him politically bulletproof in Texas is wearing thin on the national political stage. And recent polling shows that a growing number of likely Republican voters are taking a wait-and-see approach before fully committing to Perry as their guy. Reporter Ben Philpott of KUT Austin and the Texas Tribune is following Perry across the nation and covering his political evolution. On Thursday, Ben was in Jefferson, Iowa, where Perry was in full campaign mode. And Ben tells us Perry was looking to bounce back from a poor Tea Party debate performance in Tampa.
There was no real problem on Wednesday when he was speaking in Virginia to Liberty University. I mean, he stayed away from politics almost completely during that speech before about 10,000 Liberty University students and faculty and staff. So there was no, you know, he got several applause lines. Everyone seemed to think his speech went well. I talked to several people afterwards. And so there was no, you know, there's still a good bloom going on that one. But tonight and into Friday, you're going to see more people beginning to question things like, well, you know, I heard about this HPV vaccine situation. And you know, I'm not sure if I like what you're talking about with immigration. And even maybe, you know, where I'm not sure that I'm not sure that we approve of what you're talking about with Social Security. I mean, you know, these are the real, you know, meet and greet, walking through the cafes and the coffee houses, and you're going to get more criticism from events like that than you would the speech that he gave in Liberty.
On the HPV vaccine executive order that he issued for Texas, people are saying that challenges his credentials as a true conservative.
It's interesting because, I mean, in Texas, we all know about it. It was a big story back in 2007, and it's obviously gotten a good bit of play in the debates, especially the one Monday night in Tampa. But I wasn't quite sure how much that would resonate with people, you know, in Iowa. And yet the first person that I talked to today, actually driving from Des Moines, Iowa, up to Jefferson, where Perry is going to speak, stopped in a little town of Perry, Iowa, spelled the same way and everything, just thought it was too cute, had to stop and get some pictures of Perry, Iowa, and see if Governor Perry had stopped in at any point yet. But first person I talked to there, you know, asked, so what do you think about some of the issues that Governor Perry talks about on the campaign trail? And the first thing out of his mouth was, well, you know, I heard about this HPV vaccine. And I don't like it, and I don't understand why he was trying to give it to, you know, little girls, give them something to give them a vaccine for a disease that they can't get unless they're having sex. I mean, it was amazing. Right off the bat, that was the first thing that he wanted to talk about. So it obviously does resonate, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of reaction he gets from crowds when he's doing some one-on-one fun stuff.
It does seem like, from an outsider's point of view, when they look at Rick Perry in Texas, is that we're kind of being accused of, did we give Rick Perry a pass on these issues when they popped up here in the state?
Oh, no. Well, that was one of the things that actually I was talking with some of the other reporters, you know, from the moment that the campaign started. It all goes back to the Ben Bernanke when Governor Perry said that, you know, Texans might treat him ugly. A lot of the national press kind of really picked that up and ran with it, the idea that a presidential candidate would say something like that about someone else. And yet again, it's something that we talk about. I mean, we've heard him say things like that in Texas all the time. So I asked a friend of mine, well, you know, what's the difference? We obviously have been reporting this. And he said, well, in Texas, we report about this. And it makes the rounds for a day or so. But in the end, there's not a lot of, you know, nobody picks it up and runs with it. Because it is a red state, it is a state where Governor Perry is popular, and so it just doesn't reach any level of commotion over that because of his popularity. but you run that nationally, you know, it's going to hit blue states where people will make lots of hay over it. And that's why it continues to, you know, that single statements like, you know, we're going to get ugly to, or, you know, we would treat him ugly, just go round and round and round. And everybody knows about it now because you have states that are less friendly to Republicans and Governor Perry, and they want to make a big deal about it. And so they do.
Well, then it seems like there's a lot more here that they could mine for big stories down the road. You know, the questions about crony capitalism and the Texas Enterprise Fund, this governor's mansion, the Horseshoe Bay real estate deal. He could be really vulnerable on those things.
Well, you know, he could. Again, though, we are still talking about a Republican primary. And for many of the same reasons that in Texas those stories did not gain traction and did not resonate with people, you're going to see, you're going to see some of the same things within Republican primaries. It's going to take one of Governor Perry's opponents taking something and latching onto it and getting their supporters to latch onto it for some of these things to really come up. You know, it's HPV again, but you saw kind of one of the first steps of a candidate bringing up the idea of cronyism with Perry at the debate in Tampa on Monday when Michelle Bachmann, you know, in talking about the HPV vaccine, said, oh, yes. And of course, let's remember that the reason Governor Perry did it was because he got a $5,000 donation from Merck, and it would have meant a lot of money to one of his former chiefs of staff who was a lobbyist for Merck. You know, that's what Michelle Bachmann said. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how other candidates use Governor Perry's record, extensive record, after being governor for so long on the campaign trail. And that's where it's going to, in this Republican primary, that's where you're going to see it gain traction, I think.
Perry's response to that allegation that you think I could be bought for $5,000, it takes a little bit more than $5,000 to buy me, it didn't seem like it was a very good response. And then actually we're finding out more that Merck did donate more than $5,000 to the Perry campaign.
Yeah, you know, I think I was covering it that night, and I think I put something up on our you know, Twitter feed that I was running, doing some commentary about the debate. I just said that probably was the weakest response that he had had in the two debates he's done so far. And you know, and Michelle Bachmann, of course, had a much better response to it, which was, well, you know, he said, I'm offended if you think that, you know, $5,000 would buy me off. And her response was, well, you know, I'm offended for the parents and children that we're going to be forced to do this without any discussion. So, you know, he just did not have a good debate. I think that all around people can see that that was obviously a weaker effort than what happened in California. And now, you know, he's got about a week and then he'll have another debate and we'll see how he bounces back. And we'll see later today how he bounces back, you know, with these kind of one-on-one handshake events.
Reporter Ben Philpott of KUT Austin and the Texas Tribune is covering Governor Rick Perry's cross-country campaign to be the next Republican presidential nominee. He spoke to us from Jefferson, Iowa. As Perry campaigns, Texas burns. It's the worst wildfire season on record. The Texas Forest Service and volunteer firefighters are battling blazes in every region of the state, and their resources are maxed out. But as the Forest Service fights fires, they're also dealing with funding cuts. The legislature cut the agency's funding this year from $117 million to $83 million. Critics say the lawmakers ignored warnings about the drought and were penny wise but pound foolish in their funding of the agency. The Central Texas Bastrop Fire alone has destroyed more than 1,500 homes and killed at least two people. State leaders are trying to adjust to the shortchanging of the Texas Forest Service. On Thursday, Governor Rick Perry, Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst, and Texas House Speaker Joe Strauss requested that Texas Forest Service expedite the distribution of $27 million for the Rural Volunteer Fire Department Assistance Program and made an additional $5 million available to pay for firefighting equipment and other expenses resulting from the unprecedented wildfire season this year. Robbie DeWitt is the Texas Forest Service's Associate Finance Director.
We were notified by the state leadership that $5 million in additional funds was being provided to help meet critical needs with the volunteer fire departments in Texas. With the extended wildfires we've had for the past year, volunteer fire departments across Texas have been stretched, to say the least. Their resources generally are pretty limited, and the heavy fire season has really taxed them. So the intent is trying to help, of these funds, is to try to help the fire departments with their critical needs for operations. We're in the process of creating the process for issuing the grants to volunteer fire departments.
And so that money will be going to the volunteer fire departments. It's not the Texas Forest Service?
Well, the Texas Forest Service will administer the awarding of grants. We already administer other grant programs for VFDs, so it was logical that we handle this as well. So the $5 million will come to the Texas Forest Service. We will issue 100% of that money to volunteer fire departments.
Texas is in hard times. We've made some budget cuts. Right now, the Texas Forest Service, including employee benefits, they were appropriated for 2010-2011, $117.7 million. But next year, there's a 30% drop. It goes to $83 million. We're seeing a reduction in funding, like many of our departments across Texas. So is this going to be making Texas more vulnerable to wildfires as the drought continues?
The reduction in funding does not make Texas more susceptible to wildfires. A substantial portion of the reductions in funding to the Texas Forest Service were to grant funding under the Volunteer Fire Department Assistance Program, and those funds are issued or awarded by the Texas Forest Service for equipment and training, not for operating costs. And so where the immediate impact will be felt is the ability to award grants for trucks during the 2012-2013 biennium. We will put our focus, our emphasis on firefighter safety, and we will make awards for firefighter training and personal protective equipment. If there's funding left over at the end of the year, we may award a few grants for trucks, but by and large, we will not be awarding truck grants at this time because of the reduction. Now, this program has been in place since, operational since 2003 fiscal year, and during that time, there's been over $150 million in awards, grant awards to VFDs for equipment and training, and every volunteer fire department that was eligible for this grant program, every volunteer fire department that requested a grant for a truck received funding, grant funding for a truck. Now, there are some that have requested more than funding for more than one truck, but we've funded one for every fire department that requested it. So there's already been a significant improvement in the infrastructure and the capacity of volunteer fire departments in Texas through the program and what it's done thus far.
Former Agricultural Commissioner Jim Hightower, he's now also a liberal pundit, has gone on record saying that Rick Perry has cut the budgets that would go to volunteer fire departments by 75% in the last legislative session.
Well, the reduction was in this grant program that I just referred to, and where the reductions will be felt will be in the area of trucks.
I mean, we need trucks. I mean, you guys are running through trucks. Sometimes trucks get burnt up at these fires, right?
Yes.
They need to be replaced.
But there are other programs, too, that the Texas Forest Service operates to help with meet the truck need. And there are many fire departments and volunteer fire departments in Texas who utilize these other programs. An example is the Federal Excess Property Program, where we obtain from the federal government to the military excess property trucks, large trucks, and then we pass them on to volunteer fire departments, and they make them ready for use and use them. And there are many of those trucks still in operation in Texas helping volunteer fire departments.
These volunteer fire departments, I mean, these guys, they're really on the front line.
Yes.
They're putting their lives in jeopardy. These guys, they're just heroes.
Absolutely.
But they don't have a reliable, consistent source of funding for most volunteer fire departments. They rely on local donations mainly.
That's correct. I mean, there are some that receive support from counties or ESDs, but by and large, most VFDs rely either in part or primarily on local donations or fundraisers. The state of Texas, under the Texas Forest Service, has created a VFD emergency assistance grant program where we are accepting private donations, gifts to assist volunteer fire departments, and 100% of those funds will be given to fire departments. There's a page on our website, Texas Forest Service website, that provides additional information on how the public can assist if they're interested, and they can also donate directly to their local VFD. We do not want to take away from that. But if they live in an area where they don't have a volunteer fire department, they're not sure who to send assistance to, they're more than welcome to send it to the Texas Forest Service, and then we will provide the funding to volunteer fire departments.
Robbie DeWitt is the Texas Forest Service's Associate Finance Director. As the Texas Forest Service battles what may be the state's most destructive wildfire outbreak ever, state lawmakers are facing criticism that they ignored warnings and slashed the budget of the Texas Forest Service. This week, the Texas energy company Luminant announced it would lay off 500 workers and close two coal-burning power plants because it couldn't afford to comply with new EPA air pollution regulations. Reactions to the news depended on political points of view. Anti-EPA factions blamed the government regulations for killing jobs at a time when jobs are precious. Environmentalists saw this as a victory in that obsolete coal-burning power plants will go the way of the dinosaur and give way to cleaner energy providers. Lance Brown is the executive director of the Pro-Business Partnership for Affordable Clean Energy. He faults the EPA for the Luminant layoffs.
Well, David, I represent a group of businesses and consumers that really feels like national energy policy has become disconnected from reality. And I think that's what we're seeing in Texas. You know, we've heard time and time again from the administration and from the EPA that regulations are going to create jobs. We're seeing exactly the opposite in Texas, where we're not only idling generation capacity, but we're also seeing 500 families who are going to lose their jobs.
And you're saying that the EPA and their regulations that are trying to deal with emissions from these coal-burning power plants is going to cost jobs, and it's not worth trying to clean up these plants?
Well, what we're seeing is a lineup of EPA regulations. In this case, we're talking about the cross-state air pollution rule. But right on the heels of that is something on utility MAC. You also have boiler MAC rules. You have ozone rules that were just delayed a few weeks ago by the administration. So it's not one particular rule. In this case, it is the cross-state air pollution rule. But the net effect of all of these regulations is going to be what we refer to as an economic train wreck for America that weakens our electric reliability, costs consumers more, and in this case is going to cost several Texans their jobs.
When a power plant is you know, burning coal and there are emissions and they go downwind, there is a cost. They're not just putting these regulations on companies just, you know, because they want to mess with companies. I mean, they have a motivation behind it. And but you're saying it's out of balance?
What we're saying is that cleaning the air and helping the environment is always a laudable goal. But the problem with regulations as they're being proposed today is really the timeline. You know, there's no doubt from those in the utility sector that every coal-fired plant in the next 10 to 15 years is going to have the maximum environmental controls. And if you look today, a large majority of our coal-fired plants have great environmental controls. So what we're talking about is the timeline. When you impose 2- and 3-year time periods on utilities, you're going to see some pretty knee-jerk reactions. And in this case, it means immediately idling some plants and laying off a lot of workers. So our problem with the way that EPA has approached this is it's not let the marketplace really dictate the availability of technology and what we would consider the normal course of environmental regulation. You're seeing EPA have more aggressive timelines And in some cases, those are just not realistic.
There are critics who are saying that Luminant is playing the victim, that they're blaming the EPA for these regulations and shutting down these plants when these are older plants and they need to be shut down because Luminant has not managed them well.
Yeah, we understand that criticism, and if it was just Luminant, that might ring true. But there are other utilities across the country that are facing the same thing. If you look at what American Electric Power is proposing in the Midwest, it's really the same story. You're seeing, yeah, there might have been plans to shut down these coal-fired plants over a 5, 10, 15-year period, but that pace has accelerated because of EPA rulemaking. So, and really, when it comes to consumers, that's not the best case. When this works best is when companies have the time to allow technology to work its course and to not have to do things like shut down plants on very short notice. We feel like that's in the best interest of consumers, is to really have a well-thought-out process that allows companies the time to make these kind of changes.
But there are other power plants in Texas, coal-burning power plant companies, and they're not taking these severe actions by mothballing their plants. They're able to deal with these EPA regulations.
Every utility system is different, and if you look at Luminant or you look at other providers in Texas or if you look at providers across the Southeast, every utility is different, and they have different portfolios. You have some utilities with more natural gas. You have some with more coal-fired capacity. You have some with more nuclear. And so every utility is going to act differently. In this case, I think we're seeing that Luminant is going to immediately close coal-fired capacity because that's the easiest way to comply with EPA's rules. Unfortunately, it's having bad consequences for their workforce.
Lance Brown is the executive director of the Partnership for Affordable Clean Energy. Their website is energyfairness.org. The Environmental Defense Fund sees Luminant layoffs differently. They blame Luminant's management and not the EPA. Jim Marston is the EDF's Texas Regional Office and Energy Program Director.
Luminant is making a business decision to save money among many other options they have with regard to complying with this rule. The first thing I would say is this rule has been in the making for 5 years, going back to the Bush administration, and many utilities in Texas saw the rule coming, planned ahead, and have made their retrofits to meet the rule already and have no problem. Luminant sat on its hands, hoped the rule would go away, and then acted surprised when it came down. And now they are in a little bit of trouble. But Luminant has several options beyond shutting the plant down. They're allowed to buy allowances from utilities that have over-controlled both in Texas and out of the state. And I know they've not pursued these very vigorously.
That would be like offsets?
It's exactly like offsets with regard to the sulfur dioxide rule for acid rain. Yes, it's exactly the same thing that's available, and they've not pursued that option. They also could have the option of, like they're doing with the Big Brown plant, which is to switch the plant at the two boilers at Monticello to low-sulfur Powder River Basin coal, and they can do it for the Big Brown plant. They certainly could do it from Monticello.
Get off the lignite.
Dirty. Yeah, get off the lignite. Lignite's a little bit better than burning dirt, but it's very dirty.
But they own those lignite mines.
Sure, absolutely. But they are repowering the Big Brown plant to burn the cleaner fuel. They could do that if they wanted to in Monticello.
And that's where the majority of the job losses are coming from, is from closing down these lignite mines.
That's right. But I was going to the point about whether they had to shut these plants down, the answer is no. The other thing they could do is, and this has been pointed out by a research firm on Wall Street called Bernstein and Associates, they could run their existing pollution controls called scrubbers more than they're doing now and reduce the emissions significantly as well. So what Luminant's doing is basically making a business choice after they fiddled for 5 years and got themselves in trouble.
I mean, they could do those things, and they would pass those costs along to the consumer. We live in a deregulated market. for much of Texas, commercial electricity, and consumers could find a cheaper energy provider. And so Lumina's looking at the bottom line, saying that EPA is driving me out of the market.
Now, Lumina is not forced to close the plant by the EPA regulations. They are making a decision to deal with a problem that's largely their own making, and they're picking an option that saves them money, but they're not required to shut down the plant. They're not required to even shut down the mines. They have other options they've not pursued very vigorously.
And when we say Lumina, we're talking about TXU. That's what it used to be called, right?
It used to be called TXU. It was bought out in 2007 by some private equity companies. And on the whole, they've done many good things, and they made some great commitments at the time they bought the plant. But frankly, they probably overpaid for the plant, and they have some financial problems. And Lumina rolled the dice, basically didn't invest in pollution control in the last several years, unlike NRG or Austin Energy or LCRA. And now now we're in trouble. They had hoped the rule would go away, but it did not.
The Electric Reliability Council of Texas is saying these EPA rules would force more energy shortages in Texas, brownouts, that we need these plants.
The ERCOT report is a very interesting political report. You got to read it very closely. They imply that kind of stuff, but when you read between the lines, it's not quite so clear.
So ERCOT's
own numbers show if we have a normal hot summer, but not one that is of historically hot proportions, we have plenty of capacity for the next couple of years, even without these plants. And we also know that a number of other plants are coming on board, both wind and natural gas, that can take up the slack.
Just this summer, we've had a lot of warnings coming from ERCOT telling people to conserve power. And we've had companies who've been asked to power down because the load on the grid was too much. And this past winter, we had a record cold winter in Texas.
Yeah.
And there were brownouts in the state because there wasn't enough power to go around.
Right.
And they had some generators who had to go offline for unexpectedly. So, I mean, we are seeing record demands now.
Yeah, we ought to talk about what happened in the winter and the summer. In the winter, the three plants that failed were coal plants. And what people are saying, let's rely upon the plants that fail during the very cold weather to keep us in a strong reliability situation. And in the summer, you probably know that one coal plant has already had to curtail its operations because there's not enough water to cool the boiler there. Or what some people are saying is we've got to rely upon these big, dirty coal plants, even if they're causing health problems, because that's the only thing we can do to keep our electricity up and going. But we know from experience, both in the very cold winter and the very hot summer, that those plants are the most vulnerable. What we ought to do instead is go to other resources that we know we can count on and don't have pipes that freeze in the winter or require massive amounts of water that we no longer have for cooling.
Jim Marston is the Environmental Defense Fund's Texas Regional Office and Energy Program Director. Their website is edf.org. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm Yvette Benavides. Texas Matters is produced by David Martin Davies. Send your email comments to us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters programs on our website at tpr.org, and you can subscribe to our free weekly podcast on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.